Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Bob Menendez is the only person in the world who's voted for the largest tax increase in American history and the largest tax increase in New Jersey history.
I want to focus tax cuts that are geared more to middle-class families. I have a problem with some of the highest income tax cuts in a way that are disproportionate, that are driving the debt, and ultimately don't help middle-class families meet their challenges.
New Jersey U.S. Senate candidates Tom Kaine and Bob Menendez side by side from our shows this week where we interviewed them one at a time. Control of Congress could well be decided by some of the close House and Senate races in our area, and so we begin this last Friday before the election with a Tri-State Reporters Roundtable. With us now, Star Ledger columnist Tom Moran of Harris from WNPR Hartford. That's the public radio station in Hartford. He's a political reporter there. And Errol Cockfield, Albany bureau chief for Newsday. And if you want to hear side-by-side statements excerpted from this program of Kaine and Menendez in New Jersey, Lieberman, Lamont, and Schlesinger in Connecticut will be up shortly, and Faso and Spitzer in New York, clips including the Kaine and Menendez ones we just played on taxes. You can visit our new online election feature, The Hot Seat. It's on the homepage at WNYC.org. Tom, Errol, Av, good morning. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Nice to be here.
Let's go around the horn first to talk about last-minute election strategies in some of these races, then we'll get to some other stuff. Tom Moran in New Jersey, what are Kaine and Menendez doing on this final weekend in person and on TV?
They are both going crazy with 10 meet and greets a day everywhere. Tom Kaine is holding another press conference today to hammer away at Menendez's ethics, so I guess we can expect that to continue for the final weekend.
And that's
Menendez is talking about anything else, basically, all issues that he hopes to remind people that Tom Kaine is part of the George Bush team.
So that's the same way they're approaching the television ads from what I've seen over the last few days.
Right. Everybody's expecting them to, you know, end with them. Well, they both have some positive spots, and everybody's expecting them to sort of rely on them in the final few days.
And Av Harrison, Connecticut, what are Lieberman, Lamont, and Schlesinger doing this weekend in person and on TV?
Well, Lieberman, of course, will not be campaigning as of sundown tonight. It's Shabbos, so he doesn't campaign on the Sabbath. But today he's got an event at about 11:30 this morning in Hartford. He had another event there last night. And incidentally, he chose to do an event with his supporters in Hartford last night rather than attend a debate with Lamont and Schlesinger there, which I was a panelist of last night. So his strategy at this point is do some meet and greets and run out the clock. He is ahead in the poll by 12 points over Lamont the other day. Now, Ned Lamont, he's bringing in some of the Hollywood muscle that lives in Connecticut. Paul Newman has just cut a TV spot for Ned Lamont, and he's got events all weekend. He's trying to he has spent a lot of his own money, and he's continuing to do that. And Schlesinger, he had his free TV time last night, and I don't think he's going to run any more ads. But at this point, it doesn't look good, very, very good for Alan Schlesinger.
Errol, the Hillary Clinton-John Spencer race is not in play, the Senate race in New York in the same way. So what are some of the House races in New York State that you're following?
Well, I think the House races that are interesting are the one in upstate, obviously, where Tom Reynolds is in a political fight for his life against businessman Jack Davis. Reynolds has been tied to the Foley scandal and really had to defend himself. You also have in the Albany area, John Sweeney, who's a popular Republican in that area, is, you know, trying to fend off a pretty serious challenge from Kirsten Gillibrand. In that case, there's been some questions about a 911 call that came from his house from where his wife called police, and there's been questions about whether or not there was a domestic incident there. Out on Long Island, you have a very fiery Republican, Pete King, who's a fierce backer of the war in Iraq, is trying to fend off a challenge from David Mejias, who is a Nassau legislator, who's very little known, but is right now in the polls. He's pretty much neck and neck with King.
Really? That's become a race, Mejias versus King.
Yeah, it has.
What are they battling on? You mentioned the war in Iraq. That's one thing King is known for. He's also very known for being staunchly for the immigration crackdown this year.
Yeah, I think the war in Iraq, I mean, I think Mejias has been very effective in showing that King has been sort of, in a way, at least as Mejias puts it, a blind follower of the president's policies. And in this case, the internet has been sort of effective, too, because King's folks were able to get out a little, you know, something that got on YouTube about King talking to a group of seniors and comparing Iraq to Manhattan in his visits and saying, and it was a thriving metropolis in essence. And a lot of people were skeptical about that, obviously.
And we have one Republican in the New York City delegation, Congressman Vito Fisella of Staten Island and a little bit of Brooklyn. Why in New York City isn't his race rated more competitive?
Well, I just think it's, you know, obviously the dynamics of New York City where you know, Democrats are, you know, obviously outweigh Republicans here. It's just the dynamics of the city, I think, where people have expectations that, you know, Democrats are going to do well. And Staten Island is obviously like a stronghold, but, you know, it's a stronghold, but Democrats don't seem to make many inroads there in that mm-hmm. district, maybe because of the way the lines are drawn there.
Tom Moran, back to you in New Jersey. I see lots of ads the last few days in one House race in New Jersey, Republican Congressman Mike Ferguson and his Democratic challenger, Linda Stender. Why do they have so much money for the airwaves?
Well, that's one that has attracted some national attention because Stender is seen as having a shot. Ferguson still has a lead. And I have to say that every 2 years, the Democrats say Ferguson is the one we think we can knock off, and then he wins convincingly. This year could be different. Stender, the Cook Political Report, says that's a close race that only leans Ferguson's way. The district was gerrymandered after the 2000 census to help the Republican candidate in return for helping the neighboring candidate, Rush Holtz, who's a Democrat, save his seat. So it's very hard to knock these guys off now that it has been gerrymandered, even in a year like this.
The Ferguson ads call Stender a big spender and a double dipper on public pensions. What's that about?
Well, she's been in the Assembly during all the McGreevy budgets where they had spending increases of over 15% on some of them. So his line of attack is to basically do to her what Menendez is trying to do to Kane, to associate them with the unpopular leader of the party. And so those ads, you know, she did vote for those budgets, so they seem somewhat like legit to me.
And the double dipper on her pensions, it says she's getting two public pensions.
This was so common in New Jersey that members of the legislature hold another public job. You know, at the moment it's slipping my mind what her other public job is, but it's very common in the legislature. You know, something like half of the legislators have other jobs, and they total up the salaries and get generous pensions based on that.
I noticed that Ferguson doesn't show his face in his ads, at least the ones I've seen. It's these attacks mocking Stender. She does show herself in her ads. What are those competing approaches?
I'm not sure. Ferguson has definitely tried to focus it exclusively on Stender, not on his own record. These days, there are so many positions he takes that are toxic in New Jersey, like support of the Iraq War, like opposition to abortion, like opposition to any kind of embryonic stem cell research, that his best strategy is to focus on Stender. And Stender, you know, is running as a pretty mainstream Democrat. She's putting herself in and trying to establish some warmth. She has an advantage among women voters, so that might be part of it, too.
Off, back to you in Connecticut. How's the Christopher Shays, Diane Farrell congressional race winding up? Are they advertising on TV much?
Oh, yes. It's all – you can't turn a TV on in Connecticut and any of the network affiliates without seeing at least half a dozen political ads right now. That's actually what I was going to say. It's not only the Chris Shays, Diane Farrell race in the 4th District in Fairfield County, but there's two other very competitive House races, and that's really where the interest is. Ironically, at this time, everybody was focused on the Senate race for so long because of the Democratic primary between Joe Lieberman and Ned Lamont, but it's really Nancy Johnson is behind in a couple of the polls, recent polls that were released in the last week. She's running behind. She's a 23-year incumbent. That's the 5th District, which was combined with a Democratic district after redistricting the last time, and that's in this sort of western, northwestern, central part of Connecticut in an oddly shaped district. But she's running behind her Democratic challenger, Chris Murphy, right now. And Joe Courtney is running very close or about even with Rob Simmons in the 2nd District, which is over in the south. Eastern part of Connecticut near Groton, New London, and actually the district covers pretty much the whole eastern half of the state. So those are three very close congressional races, and two of them are too close to call. One, it looks like Chris Murphy has about a 3 to 4 point lead over Nancy Johnson. But the Chris Shays, Diane Farrell race, we had Chris Shays as a guest on our talk show 2-3 days ago. He doesn't sound like he sounds like a candidate who is searching for the right words right now. It doesn't sound good. He has changed his position on now he supports a timeline for withdrawing the troops from Iraq. He had been a very strong supporter of invading, and he now is saying that setting benchmarks for Iraq, according to what Diane Farrell and the Democrats want to do, that's actually stay the course in Iraq. And his strategy is actually calling for a change. He's saying he was wrong about the war, and so was Joe Lieberman and everybody else, the Democrats also who supported it, and so was George Bush and Dick Cheney. So he sounds a bit desperate in the last few days.
Changing the definition of the word change.
Right, exactly. I mean, you have to he's got a problem because he is not really a right-wing ideologue of a Republican. But those middle of the road, those moderates in Fairfield County and he's always gotten support from independents and Democrats, those people really don't like the war. And he's been such a strong war supporter. He's changed his position on the timeline for withdrawal. But I think some people view that with skepticism because he changed that position after seeing Joe Lieberman lose the Democratic primary in the Senate.
Interesting.
He went to Iraq 14 times, and after the 14th trip, that's when he changed his position. He says it has nothing to do with politics, but Diane Farrell says it has everything to do with politics.
We will continue in a minute with our Tri-State Reporters Roundtable on this Friday before Election Day. Star Ledger political columnist Tom Moran, Av Harris, political reporter from WNPR Public Radio in Hartford, and Errol Cockfield, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. We'll also sample some more side-by-side clips from the interviews we've done over the course of this campaign with some of these major candidates. We'll revisit a few of the interesting comparisons and play them right next to each other, as you can also hear on our website, WNYC.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC on the Friday before Election Day. And don't forget, while most midterm elections are a snooze on a Tuesday in November, not this year. Control of Congress is actually at stake with key races right here in New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut, plus the fierce and sometimes bizarre battles nationwide. And so we will be doing election results Tuesday night, starting early and going late. Join me with Amy Eddings at 7 o'clock Tuesday night, 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. And, of course, we'll also learn then whether Alan Hevesy can hang on to his job as New York State Comptroller, even though he's been banished from the Democrats' election night party. So our election returns program begins 7 o'clock Tuesday night here on 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. Right now it's our Tri-State Reporters Roundtable for this Friday before the election. And let's play some more clips of the candidates, all from this program down the home stretch. And again, all excerpted from our new online election feature, The Hot Seat, where you hear side-by-side comparison clips of Spitzer and Faso in New York, Kane and Menendez in New Jersey, and Lamont and Lieberman and Schlesinger in Connecticut, all clips originally from this program. You can see it at WNYC.org on the homepage. Spitzer and Faso. Do we have those ready to go? Spitzer and Faso. We know who's going to win, of course. But here's an example. After the New Jersey Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage, the importance of some things that they said on this program a little earlier in the campaign season, and an example of how different they are on the issue that's got this new life. Let's listen.
I've said it. We would draft a bill and introduce it, and that because it's in accord with what I believe, and it's just one of those matters that I respect those who disagree with me. Just to clarify, nothing I've said would mandate that religious entities recognize a marriage that might have a civil import. But if they do not recognize it because of a religious disagreement, we respect that. But I think as a matter of civil law, it should be recognized.
Elliot Spitzer, John Faso.
I'm against gay marriage, but I'm open to civil unions. I voted, in fact, I was one of the first Republicans way back in 93 in the legislature to support the non-discrimination bill for gays and lesbians. So my position is remarkably closer to Hillary Clinton's than it is to Mr. Spitzer's.
All right, Spitzer and Faso. Let's go back to Cain and Menendez. Let's compare them on two issues. First, ethics. We have the ethics Cain ready to go. This is, of course, as we've been hearing, the heart and soul of the campaign, the Cain campaign, those gazillion TV ads. I think they're popping up during the shows, in the middle of content. No, I guess not, but it seems like that. There are so many of them for both Cain and Menendez. Those gazillion Cain TV ads are all trying to convince us Menendez is unethical. Here's some of what he said here. Menendez levels ethics charges back at you based on your campaign donors. He says you oppose legislation to ban smoking in casinos after accepting money from gambling interests. And he says you took campaign money from Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield while voting to give it a tax break. Want to address those?
Certainly. I've been leading the fight to root out smoking in the state of New Jersey in public places. I was the co-prime sponsor of the bill that did that. It took me 4 years to get it done. And I support rooting out that type of smoking. I'm now co-sponsor of a bill that roots it out in casinos. So I'm proud of my record to try to have Smoke-Free Indoor Air Act passed and signed into and become the law of the land. On the other issues, I vote against tax increases.
And as for Menendez and these issues of calls that were allegedly made on his behalf by a guy trying to pressure someone to send some money somewhere that Menendez wanted it sent, and on this landlord situation that he had with a not-for-profit client who he helped get federal funding for, I asked Menendez what he would say to swing voters about how he would assuage their concerns about not only his but Democratic Party politics and Democratic Party ethics in New Jersey, which seems to be the main reason that Menendez is not running away with this race.
Well, you know, my opponent has he's a one-trick pony, and the trick is to constantly try to, when you're wrong on the issues, you have to smear because you fear people knowing, in fact, where you stand on the issues. There's only one candidate in this race for the United States Senate who stood up to a corrupt political regime of his own party, who testified against it, who as a result of that had to wear a bulletproof vest because his life was threatened, and that was me.
All right, so Cain and Menendez on ethics, and they go round and round on that, and that's one of the key decisions for New Jersey voters who lean Democratic on their issues but are squeamish with Menendez, whether it's justified or not. He says it's not. Is it more important to you to vote for someone who you think might be cleaner, or is it more important to you to vote for someone who you think may do what you want them to do in Iraq or on taxes or whatever the issues are for you? Now we're going to compare not just Cain and Menendez, but the races in Connecticut and New Jersey with respect to the rhetoric on the war in Iraq. So here's Cain and Menendez again. I think Menendez first, this time on Iraq.
Brian, we're fundamentally different. Not only did I vote against the war in Iraq, I have been supportive of a transition out of Iraq over the course of a year, a transition that basically the Iraqi Prime Minister and National Security Advisor has said is one in which they will have the wherewithal within a year, maybe a year and 18 months, to be able to have their own security ability to stand on their own. It would also send a very clear message to the Iraqis. They have to make the hard choices, compromises, and negotiations necessary for a government of national unity. We'd bring a fair number of our troops home, but leave a contingency over the horizon out of Iraq within the region to send a very clear message to others. This is not their opportunity to seek to engage inside of Iraq, and we'd be creating a summit that would bring in NATO and regional partners who will have a clear interest in the stability of Iraq but won't do anything unless for so long as they believe that we will continue to be there staying the course in an endless occupation.
The president has made serious mistakes as commander-in-chief in this war, and the problem is that Bob Menendez's approach is not a serious policy solution. Nobody thinks it's realistic.
What's your approach?
My approach is that we need to have start at home with a new Secretary of Defense. Secondly, we need to focus on those efforts to secure Baghdad. We need to apply whatever political and military strength we can in a coordinated fashion to ensure there's a stable government with operational control of its own territory, as well as secure borders so that Iran's not destabilizing that country.
All right. Menendez and Kane on Iraq and New Jersey. And in Connecticut, our Lamont and Lieberman interviews this week reveal differences on Iraq, of course, the central issue in that race. The difference between the debate in New Jersey and the debate in Connecticut is striking.
Well, when I got into this race last, January, I was following the senator's piece in the Wall Street Journal, which was headlined, "Our Troops Must Stay." And throughout this campaign, the senator believes we're making great progress. There's a military solution here. It's just going to take a little bit longer. You know, have at it. Stay the course. And I just think that's dead wrong. And I think it's a recipe for disaster. And I think our best hope, as I said before, is to start putting in place all the incentives to make sure that the Maliki government can make the real political compromises.
There's no question that I've disagreed with the president on different parts of the implementation, but I really do support the goal. And the goal is to try to – look, we went in there to liberate the Iraqi people and ourselves from the danger that Saddam Hussein posed. After that, our goal has been to support and protect the Iraqis while they built their own representative independent government, but not forever. It can't go on forever. And if we can do that, and that's a goal that I share with the president, though I disagree with some of the tactics, that will be a tremendous victory in the war against terrorism, because we will have created in the Arab world, in the Islamic world, a different path to the future than the terrorist Al-Qaeda offer. It would be representative, it would be open, and hope for the people to live a better life.
So an interesting comparison between the rhetoric in those two races. You have Lamont in Connecticut and Menendez in New Jersey, the clear anti-war candidates, and you have Kane in New Jersey twisting every which way to say he's called for Rumsfeld's resignation, he doesn't really support the president, but Menendez goes too far, and Lieberman, on the other hand, emphasizing the importance of doing this and staying in and accomplishing this goal and that goal. So whatever your position on that, it's just interesting to see how different the rhetoric is from the two candidates trying to contrast themselves with the clear anti-war candidates. Now, one more set. The Lamont and Lieberman interviews also reveal differences on Iran. And this is one of the most interesting things that came out for me in these back-to-back interviews this week. The issue is a little below the radar otherwise, but here are two really different approaches to all of foreign policy, I think, as encapsulated in these answers on what to do about Iran.
When it comes to the potential war in Iran, I think the senator is on the wrong side of national security right now. So, yeah, I do believe some issues trump others.
Interesting that you mentioned Iran. What's your position on what to do with respect to that country, and how do you see Senator Lieberman's as different?
Well, Senator Lieberman supports the Rick Santorum Amendment for regime change backed by a force of war to make a difference. I disagree. You know, I really believe that now is the time for hard-headed direct negotiations with Iran. That's the best way that we can deal with them in their efforts to get a hold of the bomb. And it's our best efforts as we try to start redeploying our troops. We're going to have to engage them in a direct way. So I don't think we need more war in that part of the world. I think now's the time for hard-headed negotiations, working with our allies, and to get Ahmadinejad to change his murderous course.
You don't mean to say that Senator Lieberman is calling for war against Iran, do you?
He has called for regime change, and he's certainly discussed the military options front and center.
When I interviewed Mr. Lamont yesterday, he said this: you are talking about regime change in Iran, including the military option. Does he speak the truth?
I am talking about the fact that it's going to be very hard, in my opinion, to reach any kind of agreement, accommodation with a man like Ahmadinejad of Iran, who has said to thousands in Tehran, imagine a world without the United States. It is possible in our time. Who has said he wants to wipe Israel off the map. I believe that we ought to be, as we did with the former Soviet Union, working intensely with opposition groups within Iran, Iranians, students, Azeris, Kurds, others, to overthrow this government. To me, that's the biggest hope long-term for Iran. On the military option, I don't think anybody's talking about any massive military invasion. This goes to the nuclear weapons question. And there, it seems to me that we ought to be doing everything we can diplomatically and economically, but never letting the Iranians think that we have foreclosed the possibility that we would use airstrikes to knock out part of their nuclear capacity, because, frankly, I don't think they're going to negotiate reasonably with us unless they have the fear that we may actually do that.
Lamont and Lieberman, and again, all those clips originally from this program, all now also from our side-by-side candidates comparison page, the hot seat at WNYC.org. Back to our Tri-State Reporters Roundtable. Star Ledger columnist Tom Moran, Off Harris, political reporter for WNPR Public Radio in Hartford, and Errol Cockfield, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Off, how about that Iran issue in Connecticut? What does that reveal to you?
You know, it's very interesting you bring that up, because you know who was at Yale University just a couple of days ago was Mohammed Al-Baradei, who is the head of the UN Nuclear Watchdog Group, the International Atomic Energy Agency. And I was there to record his talk, and it was really interesting. He was there this week with this issue in the Senate race. I think that the Lamont perspective, the critique of Lieberman and of the Bush administration is these folks don't want to negotiate with Syria, with Iran, with countries that are perceived as or with North Korea, countries that are perceived as our adversaries. And the argument from the Lamont camp and from folks like James Baker and others is that this is hurtful to United States foreign policy goals, that you have to negotiate with your adversaries no matter how much you dislike or distrust them, and that's what we did with the Soviet Union. But I think that since 9/11, we've seen a shift in the position of folks like Lieberman and some of the people in the Bush administration that say, you know what, no, we've got to draw a line. There's some people, some things we just don't negotiate on, that old adage that we don't negotiate with terrorists. You have to draw a line, and people need to know where you stand, and you just can't negotiate with some people, and you have to say Iran is not going to be able to have nuclear weapons, and that's my final answer.
So again, Connecticut voters will decide whether they want a more outreach-oriented approach or a more draw the line and instill fear, and Lieberman used that word fear at the end of that clip, oriented approach. But there they are, and they're clear, and they're different, and that's democracy, and you'll be able to choose, and I'm glad we played those clips.
Al-Baradei made the point, I just want to make this real quick point, Al-Baradei made the point that the more that you threaten a country like Iran, the more they'll feel isolated, the more they'll want to get nuclear weapons, and that was an interesting little tidbit in this debate here.
I'm curious from all of you, especially in the close House and Senate races, who the really interested parties are. Tom Moran in New Jersey, who's throwing money at these races in New Jersey on either side? Who has vested interests if Kane or Menendez wins, or if Linda Stender or Mike Ferguson wins?
Well, I think at this point it is it's almost a national election in that regard. There's a deep, ideological division that's attracting money from both sides. Also, Menendez has been an incumbent. He's getting a lot of money, too, from he has gotten over the years a lot of money from developers and the financial industry. He's been a big ally. So there's that, his incumbency. But other than that, like Stender, for example, she's been pretty much, not a leading voice in the state legislature. What she is a sort of generic Democrat in a sense. I mean, she is attracting attention because all Democrats across the country see that there's a possibility here. it's not one of the toss-up races, but it's close enough that it's worth investing in.
Errol Cockfield from Newsday, is that true in the Tom Reynolds race upstate? Tom Reynolds, of course, Republican incumbent, head of the House Republican Campaign Committee, trying to keep the House for the Republicans nationwide. He got caught up in the Tom Foley situation, the Mark Foley situation, and he was on NPR this morning furiously making a case to Steve Inskeep that all politics in his upstate district are local and not national, and people are going to look at who he is compared to his opponent, not, you know, whether people want the Democrats or the Republicans in control. Have any idea who's throwing money at that race?
Well, I don't have a good gauge of how money is being thrown, but I do think in New York, when you look at the congressional races that are in play, I think national politics do have, you know, does hold some sway, but I think more than anything else, it is a question of how, you know, local politics are. I think in Reynolds' case, shortly after the Foley scandal broke, there was a big storm, for instance, a big snowstorm in the Buffalo area, and the Fed sent a lot of money in it, and that helped shore up Reynolds, you know, in a big way, because he was able to sort of be the conquering hero for a little bit on the storm issue. Also, in the case of Sweeney in the Albany area, he's someone who, despite his connections to national Republicans, is still viewed as someone who's very independent, and the same for King. So I think even if you have, I think the Democrats are starting to take notice in New York and pouring some more national money in, but in the end it's going to come down to, I think, a war of ideas.
And what about Lamont Lieberman? Are Republicans or traditional Republican interests funding Lieberman at all?
Well, yeah, partly, but you got to remember, Joe Lieberman has a national fundraising network. He was the Democratic nominee for vice president in 2000. He has his own presidential campaign in 2004. So he has done very well to tap that nationwide network, which does include he has reached out to some Republicans. There was a story that that he was using a donor list that he was being helped by one of the people who helped then Governor Bush run for president in 2000 that was helping Joe Lieberman raise some of his money. This has been an extremely expensive Senate race. Between Ned Lamont and Joe Lieberman combined, it'll be probably around a $30 to $32 million Senate race, and when you compare that to the governor's race in Connecticut, I think each candidate there has probably spent a total of $3 to $4 million each. And Lamont has spent about $15 million of his own money on this race.
Coming up in about 2 minutes, we are going to have some fun with two editors of Time Out New York. Have you seen their cover, bright yellow cover this week that says, that asks, are you a real New Yorker? Prove it. They've got this great quiz in there. It's really hard. I think I probably got most of them wrong, and it's really fun. So we're going to ask, are you a real New Yorker? Coming up, right after I ask Errol Cockfield, who will get the last question, what does Elliot Spitzer do on January 2nd, assuming he's elected?
I think he realizes that the problem is much larger than he initially expected.
Meaning?
Meaning the problems in New York. I mean, from an outsider's view, once you get inside, you know, the second floor of the Capitol in Albany, where the governor's office is, he's going to realize that his problems are much more complicated than they might seem now.
State debt, primarily, or what?
Well, I think it's going to be, how do you get a legislature that's been fiercely independent to go along with the reforms that you want to make.
And still get the rest of your agenda passed.
Absolutely.
All right. Star Ledger columnist Tom Moran, Av Harris from WNPR, Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford, and Errol Cockfield, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Great job as our Friday before the election Tri-State Reporters Roundtable. Thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC in a minute. Are you a real New Yorker? Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.